Grave robbery was a lucrative crime in the ancient world. Lucrative and also dangerous and complicated. To carry out the crime, you needed about 10 men. They needed stonemasons, water bearers, torch bearers, and most especially, they needed muscle. They needed strong backs. Because they had to dislodge a stone that weighed about 2 tons. It was about 6 feet in diameter, and worst of all, it was lodged into the earth by a niche that they had carved to hold it there. Once they put that stone in place, they never expected anybody to want to remove it ever again. And this they did quickly, silently, and under cover of darkness, because by an edict of Caesar Augustus, the penalty for grave robbery was death. Now, when the grave robbers got inside the tomb, they had no idea what kind of treasures they might discover there. The only thing they knew for sure is that the dead body itself was not a treasure. Occasionally, they would steal the body for the value of the burial cloths that wrapped the body, because sometimes they would wrap these dead bodies in really magnificent, beautiful, valuable wrappings. But nobody who was carrying out the crime of grave robbery in the dead of night would ever expend the effort needed to unwrap the body first. They would just take the whole cadaver away, and they'd do that later. That's why when you hear in the Gospels the stories of how Mary Magdalene and the apostles came to the tomb of Jesus on that first Easter Sunday morning and discovered that the body was missing, but that the burial cloths were all there, they knew that something really mysterious had just happened. How mysterious, they had not yet begun to fathom. The world would never be the same again. When the apostles saw Jesus crucified on Good Friday, remember, they didn't have our perspective on the events that were to unfold. They didn't say one to the other, "Oh, it'll be okay, he's coming back in a couple of days." No. For them, that moment was the death of all hope. This was the one who they were certain was the long-promised Messiah of Israel. And he was dead. This was the one they knew to be the Son of God. And he was sealed in a tomb. The Son of God became a stone-cold corpse. And words can't describe their bewilderment, their grief, their utter lack of comprehension at what had just happened. The only ones who were really sure of themselves were Jesus' enemies. Oh, they thought they had definitively won the day. One thing they were absolutely sure of is that that troublesome rabbi from Galilee would never be heard from again. But what was about to happen next is something nobody would ever imagine. Nobody would ever imagine that Jesus was about to deal death blow to death itself. But that is the story of Easter Sunday. A little tiny moment of candor for you here on this Easter Vigil night. The hardest homily of the entire year for a priest to write is Easter. And the reason for that is because this is a victory, Easter is, so complete and so transformative that you can barely give yourself permission to believe it, much less find a way to put it into words. This is not, you know, the victory in which someone rights a wrong or gains back some lost ground or takes something bad and makes it a little bit better. No. This is the victory, rather, that comes forth when the last flicker of hope in all the world had just gone out. When by every standard of measurement that you could possibly tell, there was nothing left to hope for. Evil had definitively conquered, and goodness had been defeated. And in God's plan, that was the moment that goodness won. You want to understand the mind of God. Now, this will help us through lots of mysteries of life. Meditate on what happens between Good Friday and Easter Sunday. You will see the story of how God works. The story of God's wisdom, of his love, and most especially of his power. It's the story of how goodness cannot be defeated. How beauty can't be destroyed. How falsehood goes toe-to-toe with the truth and is utterly vanquished. It's the story of what happens when the darkness tries to fight against the light and the darkness is absolutely obliterated. That's the victory of Easter Sunday. That's the way our good Lord works. I love to imagine what it must have been like the very first time the apostles laid eyes on the risen Christ. And he must have stood there and, without even saying a word, shot them a look that said to the effect of, "What? You didn't really think I was going to stay dead, did you?" God's wisdom, God's love, and most especially his invincible power. That's the story of Easter Sunday. Now, Easter Sunday is not a story of wishful thinking. Easter Sunday is not a story of optimism. You know, there's a difference between optimism and the virtue of hope. Optimism is a great thing, right? I wish we all had more of it. Optimism is what happens when you come to a difficult situation and you decide to just expect the best, right? You got to put a good face on it. And you say, things will work out for the best. Even though you know quite well, things often do not work out for the best. Which is where we get pessimism from, right? Or as pessimists like to call it, realism. No, there's a difference between hope and optimism. Optimism is based on what we think. The virtue of hope is based on what God has done. Hope is the virtue by which we are sure that God will give us everything we need. And why? Because that's what he has always done. And we need as much hope as we can possibly get. We live a brief, very fragile life. And if this life is all there is, if when we come to the end of this life, we just return to the earth and dissolve into our constituent elements, then nothing that we do or say has any importance whatsoever. Truth doesn't matter, love doesn't matter, nothing that anyone has ever done matters if that's the end. And that is precisely why this world is in so much despair right now. Why there's so much substance abuse, why there's so much alcohol abuse, why there's so much suicide, why there's so much drug abuse. Why? Because people have lost sight of God, and most especially what God does in the face of hopelessness. People have forgotten the message of Easter Sunday. And if hope is to have any meaning whatsoever, it has to be rooted in the fact that death is not the end of this story. And Easter Sunday proves that it is not. We need as much of that hope as we can get, don't we? Because this is not the Easter you asked for. Not the Easter I asked for either. But you want to know what? This might just become the greatest, most authentic Easter you have ever lived. And here's why. Because God always follows every Good Friday with an Easter Sunday for those who believe, for those who belong to him. For a lot of people out there, this does not feel like Easter Sunday. It still feels like Good Friday or Holy Saturday. Hang on in faith. Look at what Jesus did. Look at what God did when there was no hope left. You might have to persevere in faith. Sometimes that Good Friday and that Holy Saturday take their own sweet time. But just as certain as the dawn follows the darkness, so too does God follow every death with a new life. But here's the catch. Nobody can tell you that. That's something that you have to learn for yourself. You ever noticed when you read through the scriptures, for example, that there is no resurrection story? There's a story of everything else that happens in the Bible. You get the story of Jesus' birth. You get the story of his every miracle. You get the story of his every parable. But there's no resurrection story. Rather, what you get are stories just like the one that you heard here in this gospel, where the believers go to Jesus' tomb, but they arrive just a little bit too late to see what actually happened. They find an empty tomb. They find angels. Perhaps they find another disciple, but they arrive just a little bit too late to see the resurrection. Why is it that of all the stories in the Bible that are missing, that there's no resurrection story? You want to know why? It's because once you see the risen Jesus with your own eyes, you don't need a resurrection story. The apostles, the early disciples, Mary Magdalene and the holy women saw Jesus with their own eyes, and then they went and told a resurrection story to somebody else who hadn't seen it. Nobody believed them. They didn't believe until they saw him with their own eyes. And as it was then, so it is now. There's some things, brothers and sisters, that we just have to experience for ourselves. I pray that you've already experienced that. And if you have, I pray that you experience it even more deeply. And if you do not know what I'm talking about, if that sounds like a fairy tale, I pray to the risen Christ that you will know the truth of what it means that Jesus Christ came back from the dead. Because when you do, you will have a hope that nobody can destroy. And you will have a joy that nothing in this world can ever take away from you. Thanks be to God, they can't cancel Easter, right? Thanks be to God. I mean, they can close the church, and there's nothing I can do about it. I'm not the bishop, I'm not the pope, and I'm not the governor, right? They can close the church, but thanks be to God, they cannot cancel Easter. All the powers of hell tried their darndest to cancel Easter 2,000 years ago, and they failed miserably, just like they always will. Pray God deepen your faith in this Easter mystery. And then together, we will sing the praises of the God who has come back from the dead and of the Lamb who has conquered. Amen.